Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we are back from hiatus. Oh my God, I have moved. Andy went on vacation. All this stuff has happened. We're going to fill you in on everything. But before we get to any of it, we're going to talk about Spider-Man. Brand new day. It is here. That new Spider-Man movie. Oh my God, it has made so much money. It's crazy. We're also going to take a look at Her Private Hell, the new Nicholas Winding Refn film. Real odd. Real strange, or so I hear. I'm going to be honest, I didn't watch it. But I'm going to ask Andy about it. I'm going to ask him all the questions you're thinking, all right, because he saw it. We're going to talk about it. It's going to be great. We're going to talk about some upcoming trailers. DC's got a couple things coming down the pipeline you want to see. That trailer for Wicker, that new Olivia Colman thing where Alexander Skarsgård's a Wicker basket man. We're going to talk about it. And before we get to everything, we need to talk about the news. First big story this week. Big story this week. I think people maybe aren't talking about this enough. Here it is. Disney and TikTok are inking some big deal to put TikTok on Disney and Disney on TikTok or something. Actually, it's Disney Plus, really. It's weird. What do you know about this, Andy?
So Disney, famous for its copyright defense, IP defense of all of its beloved properties, announced today that it was striking a deal with TikTok to allow creators and TikTokers to basically make videos using licensed kind of Disney content. So Disney characters, Disney, you know, music from films, just Disney IPs to be able to create videos. And then those videos will stream on Disney Plus or like the Disney Plus app. So I don't know if they will actually also go on TikTok, but it's some sort of collaboration there. Because if you try to use any of that, the IP stuff, it's really difficult. You get a copyright strike right away, or your video gets muted or things like that. And so they're inking this kind of cross collaboration deal, I guess, to help bring in more viewers, younger viewers, into the Disney Plus platform.
Yeah, somebody pointing out that this is a lot. Well, Hollywood Reporter, who reported on this, pointing out this is a lot like Disney's short-lived deal with OpenAI to fold videos from Sora into Disney Plus. That never really happened because OpenAI kind of ran out of money for Sora and bailed and pivoted to some other weird scheme. But in the meantime, they want to partner with TikTok to put TikTok videos on Disney Plus in vertical video format. So when you're on Disney Plus, you can see select vertical content from TikTok that I'm assuming is Disney oriented, right? Maybe curated creators. I don't know. I think it's a little bad, honestly. I don't see how Disney Plus benefits from vertical video unless you're trying to build some sort of social media angle into it, right? To get kids to hang out over there. And that's really who this is for, kids. Like, that's what Disney Plus aims for, is kids. And it's not like parents are going to be over there like, ooh, watching vertical videos. Like, it's mostly going to be young adults, I think, and like Disney's kind of primary audience, teenagers for sure. That's who they're trying to get with this. And by putting vertical video on Disney Plus, if I've got this read correctly, which I think I do, I don't know. I think you're trying to angle for like new engagement on the platform to get eyes over there, because Disney Plus needs some juice. What do you think?
Yeah. Short form vertical video is a big thing. It's only gotten bigger. We know that YouTube has in recent months pivoted to really prioritizing YouTube Shorts and that sort of content. I mean, a lot of people are watching content on their phones. And so, you know, what I see a lot of times on TikTok is someone will have a minute, 2 minute video and then say, hey, watch the rest on YouTube. And so I can see Disney doing something similar where a creator will have a minute of content and then say, hey, check out the rest on Disney Plus. They have something called verts, as in verticals, on the Disney Plus app. So that's how I think they'll integrate that. And yeah, it's definitely going to be family-friendly content, safe for the kids to watch, that sort of thing. Hey, here's Moana and Mickey Mouse collaborating on whatever, and The Rock singing You're Welcome. It's going to be that kind of thing, I think.
You're absolutely right. I love the sound of Disney's verts for their vertical videos. You know, some corporate somebody in a boardroom came up with that on like a drive. What could we call verticals that's Disney branded? Verts. We'll call them verts. Oh, kids will think it's cool, right? It's like short and cool. It's awesome. They should have somebody on the Disney Channel being like, sign in to Disney Plus today for Disney. Upload your verts or some garbage. Like, whatever. I get it. I would probably want vertical video on my streaming platform as well. but just odd, a weird collaboration I didn't expect, which is kind of the perfect setup for the other big collab we heard about this last week. NBC Universal and YouTube are making a deal to bring NBC content to YouTube Premium subscribers. This is also kind of similar but different. What do you know about this one?
Deals. That's what we see happening here. YouTube is going to be bringing in everything from Peacock into the YouTube platform under its YouTube Premium, which they don't mention it here, but probably means a price increase because it's a lot of content. And I mean, this is going to be huge. This is sports. This is movies. This is TV. This is not live TV, reality TV, things like Love Island on the Bravo Network, NFL, NBA, like. They're really getting, this is, seems like a really good deal. It's probably going to double the price of YouTube Premium. I might have to cut back. I don't watch anything from Peacock. I don't want to be paying for that extra. But it's an interesting thing how the streamers and the traditional TVs networks are starting to kind of work together and collab into this unholy blob of content.
Yeah, I feel like, if you're like us, especially if you're an HBO subscriber, you might remember when HBO and Discovery like got slammed together and we were like, now Discovery TV content's on HBO. And you're like, dog, I'm just here for House of the Dragon and Last of Us. I do not care about whatever you've got on Discovery Television. And since then, like a lot of that's been pushed back on the front page. You don't see so much Discovery content on there anymore. Like, and it's just kind of just buried in the library, right? NBC benefits a lot from the relationship with YouTube, man. Like most of the trending videos on YouTube are typically like big budget productions, like Jimmy Fallon clips and whatnot. And like, I think NBC has content that's going to be relevant over there. Love Island is a huge deal. I watched a bunch of that last season of Love Island. It is kind of a banger show for what it's worth. And sports is going to be huge on the platform. Sports broadcasting is already a mess. So if anybody can get their home games on YouTube, they're going to do it there. As a YouTube Premium subscriber, I'm with you. I don't like this. They're going to increase the price of a service I like already for something I don't want. They're going to saddle me with a bunch of garbage that I got to scroll by to get to the good stuff. And I'm not a fan. But they're doing it. They're doing the damn thing. They didn't ask us what we thought. All right, this is Google and this is NBC. And they're shaking hands and signing deals. Andy, you're right.
So what's interesting about this, because this already exists on some other platforms where things are licensed out, but it's usually all paywalled. Like if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, that you can watch stuff from HBO or Apple TV, but you got to pay for it. And this seems like they're just going to shove it on there and just charge you. They're just going to up the price and say, hey, it's all included. You got to pay. No breaking down the bundles or anything like that. I'm excited that it'll add Universal Films to it, but I don't watch reality TV, but the sports thing is huge. And I've said this before, we've said this before on the show, that whoever can figure out how to make sports work on streaming platforms is going to be the winner, I think, of the streaming war.
Yeah, sports is a whole thing. Just this last weekend, I was over at family's house for a kind of pool party, and my brother had to stream a Rangers game from his phone in an app to a television because our host didn't have the same sports package on ESPN Plus or whatever that he had on some other goddamn. It's crazy. Like we don't do sports a lot on this pod, so it's probably not worth getting into. But dude, streaming broadcasting is, it is bad. It's so weird. Like they got to figure it out. Put them on YouTube. People will come over there and check it out. So if you're YouTube's premium sub, look forward to those prices going up soon, thanks to NBC Universal, right? Yeah, congrats, Google. I'm glad your stock price went up a half a point. I hope it all burns down. The Hollywood Reporter reported that Comic-Con 2026 has happened. God, dude, I was moving and missed like all this. Now, we have the perfect time for you to give me an update and the listeners at home and tell us what we missed at Comic-Con. This kind of came and went, I felt like, but I have my own thoughts on that. What was the big news?
So, yeah, we're a little bit behind on this news, but the two big announcement was that Black Panther 3 was going to be happening in 2028, I believe, and they announced a new person to take up the mantle of T'Challa in David Johnson, who we know from The Long Walk and Alien Romulus. He's excellent in both of those films. He's a good choice. Not the choice a lot of people thought. A lot of people thought that Damson Idris, who was in the F1 movie with Brad Pitt, might take up that mantle, but David Johnson's a great choice. He's a phenomenal up-and-coming young actor. Everyone was kind of surprised by this, but immediately it was like, oh, that's interesting. Great casting. So that's one of them. The other big one was that Ryan Gosling, who I think has proven himself in something like Project Hail Mary, has been named the new Ghost Rider, and he's joining the Marvel family, is going to star in a Ghost Rider film. This feels like a very, almost like RDJ, Robert Downey Jr. kind of casting, because he's going to bring levity, he's a strong actor, he's a really strong brand at this point. He's going to be in Star Wars Starfighter next summer, so he's the man with the brand at this point. So those are the two big ones. Zach, what do you think of those two so far?
Johnson's a banger pick. He's a banger pick. I never would have even thought to cast David Johnson as new Black Panther. I didn't think they were looking for new Black Panther. I thought, I don't think new Black Panther is going to happen for a while, and it is, and you picked a fantastic choice at the center of it. He's going to be tremendous. Love Johnson. Loved him in Long Walk. Loved him in Alien Romulus. That kid's great. Gosling is Ghost Rider. I'm not a big Ghost Rider fan. I'm not even that big of a comic head. But I saw those old ones with Nicolas Cage, and I have a loose idea of like the guy with the flaming skull, right? I don't know how he fits in as a comic book character, but I think what's really interesting about him taking on Ghost Rider is it's reported from Disney that he came to them with that project. That Gosling came to them and said, I think we should do Ghost Rider. Because he was on set with Star Wars Starfighter with Sean Levy, who's directing Ghost Rider, and he said, hey, Sean, what do you think of this? Is this something we could do? And then the two of them went to Disney and pitched it, and here we go. I don't know if he pitched Starfighter to Disney, but I know he pitched Project Hail Mary to Lord Miller. They talked about that in interviews. Gosling approached them to that project. So Ryan Gosling comes up with his role in Hail Mary and pitches it to studio and directors and gets it. Starfighter, maybe unsure. Ghost Rider pitches and gets it. Gosling's pitching his own projects. And it's kind of working. It's kind of working great. And I don't know what he's doing after that, but like, I think everybody thinks that he's a home run as Ghost Rider. I'm sure there's some people out there who think he sucks, but he's solid. He's great. He's great. So
he's in his ScarJo era.
Yeah, dude. Like he's doing the Sydney Sweeney, like I have to make my own things happen thing. Like I think this is where actors are now. It's not enough. You can just like show up on set and be a baller. You got to pitch your own shows. It's crazy.
Some other highlights that we're going to get into. We'll be talking about the Lanterns trailer a little bit later, but that was premiered at Comic-Con. We saw some footage of the Carrie Amazon Prime show that Mike Flanagan is doing. A lot of people not liking how this looks because it's very updated. They've kind of done away with the kind of original setting, but kept the core idea of this girl who's an outcast at her school and is made fun of, is made a joke of, like, the hot guy on the football team asked her out to the prom as a joke. In the novel, she has an overbearing religious mother. They're ditching a lot of that, but just modernizing it. I'm excited for it. I think it looks interesting. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, we're big Mike Flanagan fans around here. Like, Mike Flanagan's a winner, right? If you don't like his films enough and things like Dr. Sleep and the admittedly divisive Life of Chuck, like, his show hits are fantastic. The Haunting series on Netflix, Hill House, Bly Manor, One with the Island, Midnight Mass. There's a bunch of bangers. I can't even remember them all. Anyway, he's fantastic. I'm going to be honest, the Carrie story definitely gets under my skin a little bit. It's pretty rough, man. They're pretty mean to that poor blonde girl, but she gets him back in the end, and that's awesome. So 8 episodes coming to Prime Video soon, courtesy of Mike Flanagan.
A strange thing that happened also was that Johnny Depp kind of showed up out of nowhere in costume. He's doing this adaptation of A Christmas Carol directed by Ty West called Ebenezer, where it's like a prequel to, I guess, A Christmas Carol. He plays Ebenezer Scrooge. He showed up to some director's panel in full makeup and costume, being weird. Everyone, like the people on the panel, didn't know what was going on. They didn't know if it was a joke or, you know, and it was all, you know, it's a PR stunt for this movie that comes out, I guess, probably around Christmas. No one knew what to make of this. Everyone was like, what is going on? Why is Johnny Depp here? Why is he doing this movie? Why is he promoting it this way? Really bizarre stuff.
Yeah, he crashed the Resident Evil panel with Zach Cregger, director, weapons director Zach Cregger, sitting there looking visibly uncomfortable. It's really funny because it's like a Whitest Kids You Know sketch, like some washed up pedophile abusive actor shows up wearing Ebenezer Scrooge gear, and he's like, "I'm Ebenezer," and they're just like, "Dude, what are you doing? Please stop!" You know, like we're trying to talk about our movie. Really funny. Yeah, he did some big out on the street thing as well. And they like got a bunch of other people dressed as Johnny Depp actors there. Like they got an Edward Scissorhands and a Wonka and a Jack Sparrow. Like just really strange. We like Ty West's last couple movies. X and Pearl and what's the last one? Oh, God. Okay, the last one's maybe not as
Maxine.
Much of a hit. Maxine, right? With the X's. Some divides in quality in there, but still creative. But yeah, doing Christmas Carol with Johnny Depp kind of sucks. Like it just does not excite me. Doesn't ruffle my feathers, you know?
Last one I want to mention here is we saw a trailer for Blade Runner 2099, which is going to be a new series on Amazon Prime. This has been a really strange production. This stars Hunter Schafer and Michelle Yeoh, taking place 50 years after the events of Blade Runner 2049, in which a replicant revolution has overthrown humanity. And that's kind of our setup. Don't know too much more than that. This looks okay. The strange thing, though, is that apparently this is a bit of a Frankenstein film, where this started as a film in the early 2020s, was delayed because of the strikes, the labor strikes and COVID. Whatever else. And so now they've turned it into a TV show. So it's just kind of a mess. I don't really know what to expect, but this is coming out this November. And I always need something to watch around that. And I'm a big Blade Runner fan, so I'm definitely going to watch it. But kind of a troubled production.
Yeah, I think it's a layup for a show. Like a lofty kind of idea, big sci-fi, just a few episodes. Like you could definitely get somebody like me or Andy to watch. We like Hunter Schafer. We're a fan. Michelle Yeoh's kind of fun. Couldn't tell you about the Blade Runner timeline. I was reading something about that early this week, because this is 2099. Sure. Last one's 2049. I know they take place in like alt 80s. Like it's very odd. I don't know anything about that. But yeah, I don't know. It's a little cyberpunk. Why not? Blade Runner seems fun. I feel like Comic-Con was light this year, and not just because I was moving. My theory is that superhero fatigue is kind of set in and people just don't seem as interested. But also, I guess the only people announcing superhero stuff was Disney and DC, and they kind of just said, hey, we're doing more of the same. You know, Ghost Rider and Black Panther are cool, but like, I don't know. What do you think?
To me, it actually felt a little bit bigger than it has in the last couple of years. The Marvel stuff was more exciting, although we did expect that maybe we were going to get some X-Men casting. That didn't happen at all. Chris Evans, you know, some of the Avengers were there. Chris Evans was there, was never given the mic, didn't say anything. You know, they're trying to push both Spider-Man and Avengers Doomsday, which we still haven't seen a whole lot about. It is getting a little, I think it's bigger than it has been, but it's definitely not like it was in like the crazy like 2010s when the MCU was really, really big. The other kind of, not announcement, but Marvel and Disney have just decided to stop doing phases. They used to be famous for these, you know, Marvel phase 1, 2, 3 and 4 through 6 now. And they're stopping that because they realize you can't really plan that far ahead anymore. The 2010s were different. You didn't have the streaming wars. You could have 3 or 4 Marvel films in a year. Now they're taking it one film at a time. They're looking, okay, next year is Secret Wars. Year after that is Black Panther. Year after that is maybe Ghost Rider and X-Men. So they're going to be doing fewer films and probably focusing more on the bigger properties.
It's like playing putt-putt and they get halfway through having a great game and then like 10 holes in, they start going, doing really terribly. They're like, let's stop keeping score. Let's stop labeling these. You know what I mean? Stop writing it down. Put your pencils down. We're just going to make good movies. And for what it's worth, focusing on quality over quantity is a great strategy, as evidenced by our box office results this week. Dude, Spider-Man made so much money. I think it's important when we talk about box office numbers to kind of put into perspective how big of a release this is. It's so crazy. How much money did it make?
Spider-Man Brand New Day is setting a number of records and made $360 million domestic. That is just in the United States, $927 million globally, nearly $1 billion in its opening weekend. It beat Avengers Endgame in domestic opening. It very close. I think it was 358 for Avengers. And this is, you know, not as big of a movie, arguably. Like, you don't have a ton of heroes. It's not this big event. It's, you know, around just a handful of heroes that we know. It just goes to show how much people just really love Spider-Man. Just insane numbers.
Yeah, billion with a B, a capital B, $1 billion, just shy of it, in 3 days, not even business days, 72 hours, $1 billion. It's going to continue to coast, right? Legs are going to carry it further for sure. I can't believe how much money this movie made. People come out for event films, right? If they're going to spend the money for the expensive popcorn and drink in the seat, they want it to feel like an event. Spider-Man is an event. Avengers is an event. This seems to be true no matter which way we go. Boy, I can't believe it made this much. That's so much money in 3 days, dog. That is so much money. It's crazy. Movies don't make this kind of money. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah, we always knew that Spider-Man would do well and probably be a $1 billion film, but it's looking like it might be a $2 billion film. Like, it's just crazy. It has no competition the rest of the summer. Like, summer's basically over. All the big tent poles. Spider-Man was the last big tent pole. So it has August and probably into September to itself. Number two at the box office was The Odyssey, which continues to do really well. $51 million domestic, $911 million globally. It will also be a $1 billion film, which is phenomenal in itself for a 3-hour R-rated epic. Those 70mm IMAX showings are still sold out. We got tickets to see it again. It'll be my fourth time later this month. Super excited about that.
Yeah, I'm glad Odyssey is still killing it. I think somebody just asked me earlier if it was going to tip over $1 billion. I think it will, for sure. Between all the IMAX shows they still got, just sold out, back to back to back to back, coming up through September, like, it'll get there, for sure. Obviously not the big splash Spider-Man makes. It's a good comparison, because yeah, you tell somebody a movie made $1 billion in 3 days, they go, wow, that's a lot. Help me see what that means in comparison to other movies. Like, Odyssey is not even close. And that's such a big movie that's had so much scuttlebutt. People have talked about it so much. Nothing compared to Spidey.
Right. Spider-Man's, it's a four quadrant thing. You're not taking your kids to the Odyssey. You're not taking a family of four or five to the Odyssey. So that kind of shows the power of the four quadrant, well-branded film. Number three was Toy Story 5 with another $6 million, which has now crossed $1 billion in itself. Well, just a little over $1 billion, continues to do well. Monsters and Minions and Monsters in fourth place with $5.8 million. It's made $450 million. I think that they want a lot more than that, but that's still pretty solid for that kind of movie. And then to round out the top five, Moana came in fifth with another $261 million globally. That movie was very expensive. That movie was expensive as Spider-Man and looks terrible. That's going to be a big bomb. And then a side note, I think this was maybe seventh, Obsession in like its seventh or eighth week is now at $470 million. I keep having to readjust my expectations because I'm like, oh, it's going to top out at 400. Oh, it'll top out at 450. Like, it just keeps going. The little movie that could, Obsession, a near $500 million film.
It's so crazy. I'm glad Disney's getting smacked around a little bit for the Moana live action nobody wanted. Good. Maybe that'll be a bit of an indicator in the future. We already talked about this the last couple of weeks. They're running out of ideas there anyway. They got Tangled they're doing, and they want to do Frozen. And then I think after that, you're dipping into like Pixar films. Like, I just don't think they're just running out of gas in the tank. And the downfall of this Moana movie feels a little bit evident towards that. We'll see though. Tangled will do good. Frozen will do great. Yeah, man. Disney crushing it. Good God. Spider-Man, Toy Story, Moana, like, still got three out of the top five, you know, even for the, well, I guess Sony is Spider-Man, but I mean, Marvel gets a little piece of that, right? There's some kind of something. There's a Marvel logo at the front of that movie. So I don't know. Any other thoughts on the box office? We're jumping to Spider-Man.
I think I'm ready.
All right. Well, I'm taking the summer on this, so please excuse any funny delivery. The film is Spider-Man, Brand New Day. It's been 4 years since the events of Spider-Man No Way Home, and Peter Parker, played by Tom Holland, is living in effective isolation in New York because nobody knows who he is. At the end of that last movie, everybody forgot who Peter Parker is, right? Including his girlfriend, MJ, and his friend, Ned. But somehow, Peter Parker's got to keep doing his thing because the world still needs Spider-Man, or at least New York does. So, as time goes by, Tom Holland, Peter Parker, waits and continues to be Spider-Man and continues to watch as MJ and Ned, his friends, go to college and get a little bit older. And he gets a little older, too. He makes a couple friends along the way. Frank Castle, the Punisher, played by John Bernthal, and maybe an associate at the FBI or the local damage control department, it's called, in New York, where he's got a couple of friends. But one day, when the Punisher and Spider-Man are trying to apprehend Scorpion, played by Michael Mando, they find some kind of other evil in New York, some kind of possessive force that can flip between anybody in the blink of an eye, that can possess them, some kind of telepathic something. And while trying to tackle that, Spider-Man realizes, A, he's not going to get by on his own. He's going to have to make some connections somewhere. And B, he's changing. Peter Parker is becoming something different. He starts having these fits of violence, these strange episodes where he passes out and wakes up and things are different in his apartment, very different. And all of this is setting for our first Spider-Man film in a few years that has absolutely crushed at the box office this weekend, Spider-Man Brand New Day. An interesting movie. I'm excited to talk about it. Ultimately, a great comic book movie, I think, before anybody hits the comments and it's like, he didn't glaze it right away. It's good, okay? It's a good comic book movie. Let's get into it. Andy, what'd you think of Spider-Man Brand New Day?
So I thought this was a little up and down. I think there's parts that work really well. I think there's other parts that are kind of a drag. It's way too long. It's a full 2.5 hours. And the first 90 minutes, I was like, this movie's kind of all over the place. It feels really unfocused. There's too many characters, a little bit too much going on. And then there's this big fight with the Hulk that we know that we've seen in the trailer. So it's not a spoiler, but that doesn't come until about 90 minutes in. And then that last hour is really good. I really like that part, but the beginning that like I said, is a little bit all over the place. You know, Spider-Man's dealing with, again, the events at the end of No Way Home, where he's lonely, he doesn't have friends, he's not with Mary Jane, his body is changing. It's almost like a tale of like a second puberty is what I've heard it compared to. There's also this mind villain that played by Sadie Sink, who I won't give away any more than that. But also it sort of kind of doesn't become a Spider-Man movie in parts. Like there's a part where it becomes Sadie Sink's movie for about a half hour. And I feel like I sound like I'm being negative on it, but I'm not. I think overall it does work. We do get a lot of fun scenes. I think the action is really good. This is directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, who did Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. Everyone is liking this a lot more. I say it looks like they filmed, they're outside. It looks like a real movie. More, we do have good performances. It's funny because Tom Holland was talking about hanging it up. There's no way he's gonna do this till he's 90, just like Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
I think we do have good performances. It's also setting up some things for, I think, down the line in the MCU, introducing some new ideas and characters. But there's a ton going on. I think a little bit too much. I think you could have cut some plot lines, cut some time.
Yeah, I think much of the success of Spider-Man Brand New Day isn't because of like what's going on in this movie, and it's more just the legacy of Spider-Man at the cinema and on the page. Like people know him, they love the character, we love Miles Morales, man. They got kids dressing up as Spider-Man in Spirit Halloween costumes like every year, right? More and more. Spider-Man is a huge deal. The actual movie in here is good. It is a serviceable comic book movie. It kind of reminds me in that way of like Supergirl, in that like Supergirl is somebody's favorite comic book movie, but just being a serviceable comic book movie is not good enough. Now you got to go the extra mile. Spider-Man Brand New Day makes some efforts to do that, I think, with some good collaborations with other heroes and or villains. Hulk's a great one. Punisher's really welcome in here. You're right. It's doing some setting the table for like kind of the future and kind of what's coming next. And I think listeners in the know will know what that means. And listeners in the don't know probably still know what that means, but I can't tell you because we don't do spoilers here. Either way, I think it's a good return to form for Tom Holland as the web slinger. This is kind of the first Spider-Man movie that's like a 4, right, with one of these in it, like Spider-Man 1. The first Spider-Man got 3 movies. Amazing Spider-Man got 2 movies. Tom Holland got 3. And then this one, not including appearances in like Civil War, the Avengers movies. Yeah. Like he's been doing this Spider-Man thing for a minute. It's unfortunate that it seems like Holland has not been able to branch out much. He's tried. We've covered other Tom Holland movies on this pod. He's always just fine. But he's just kind of exceptional as Peter Parker. Like, this seems to be the place where he really shines on screen, at least for everybody else. And I think he shines here, despite the fact that Spidey's doing some kind of emotional stuff and going to some weird places. So let's get into it. First things first, Destin Daniel Cretton is the director of this film. We previously saw him tackle Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings. He was going to be the director of Avengers Kang Dynasty. And then when Jonathan Majors got caught beating his girlfriend in a taxi cab in New York, Disney dropped him, switched to Dr. Doom, hired Robert Downey Jr. for a sweet $100 million payday for the 2 Avengers movies. And they bumped Destin Daniel Cretton off that and said, hold on. We're going to give you that Spider-Man movie at Sony, though. You're going to love that. And he does. I think he does a great job here. There's a lot that works really well. I think he learned a lot from his work on Shang-Chi. I think Spidey is a very likable villain, a likable hero. I think you have a lot of good collabs. And you get some really good action. Surprisingly good camera work, too, in a number of sequences. And very visible choreography, not just in Spider-Man, but also in villains, specifically Scorpion, the Hand, a bunch of ninjas that he fights at one point, and this possession sequence where people in New York get possessed by this sort of entity as it flips through them, and you'll see these long shots of like multiple people throwing themselves one direction, somebody else almost catching this invisible force. Really fantastic work. Very practical, very grounded, really great.
I think the ensemble works really well here. You have John Bernthal. I forgot to mention him early. He plays Frank Castle, also known as the Punisher, in kind of Disney's The Punisher, where he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't kill anyone. He's not on screen. And he's more of a mentor figure for Spider-Man. They have a little bit of a older brother, younger brother dynamic in here, and it works really well. But like all the people you were naming, the Hand, Scorpion, like I said, the Hulk, you have a ton of comic book characters in this, and it feels the way a good comic book will read, because that's how comics are. Well, you'll have a mix of heroes and villains, and instead of just one or two, like, you know, the Dark Knight has Batman and the Joker, and that's it. This has a big mix, and it all works together, I think, pretty well. There still may be a little bit too many people. Sadie Sink, of course, kind of, she comes in a little bit later in the film. There's this mystery of, again, some sort of mind villain, but someone that there's crimes being committed and someone is trying to get into like a kind of fortress place. And they kind of figure out like one person is doing this. They're trying to get into this thing. We don't know what's in there or what they're after. So it's a little bit of a mystery as well, which is what a lot of comic books are, because mysteries play out really well in comics.
I know I already praised Holland's performance as Spidey. The physical is already fantastic. But I want to say notably his character work is a lot better. He's got a bit more New York this time in him. You can hear it in his accent. He's got to kind of go dark side a little bit for some of this those changes I was teasing in the summary. You can kind of see him in the trailer a bit. And notably, he's a bit isolated and a bit lonely. And this separates him from MJ and Ned, who are kind of on their own track through the first half of the movie. It's a shame. I think Zendaya is a big welcome force in these movies. She gets some kind of odd lines in here as MJ, but you know, she gets there. They didn't do this thing where she's not in the movie. It's all like Gwen Stacy or something. Like, no, it's definitely a Peter MJ sort of movie. Jacob Batalon, meanwhile, as Ned, is fine. I think he gets a little less screen time in this movie, and I think that's a good thing. Hulk is great. You get some other... Oh, God, where was I going with this? The ensemble. It's overstuffed. That's where I was going with this. You've got Hulk for sure. Mark Ruffalo. Trammell Tillman is working at Damage Control. You have one of the cast members from The Bear over on Hulu. It was kind of his contact. I can't recall her name. She's wonderful. She's kind of his contact. Detective Jean DeWolf. It's just a lot. It's a lot of characters because it's like a 2.5-hour movie. And I'm with Andy. It's kind of too much. Like, especially some of the stuff at Damage Control in the first act. You're just like, I feel it's time to get up and go to the bathroom. Nothing is happening. I don't care. Move it along. Peter kind of sets out on this investigation to find out who keeps trying to like hack and break into this very sensitive part of this building in New York where all these prisoners and information is held. It reminds me a little like Arkham Asylum or something. And his kind of investigation into that is interesting for sure, but like it makes for a long kind of B or C plot. I guess it's the A plot alongside Peter's isolation and then growing changes.
Right. I keep thinking about The Odyssey and how I've seen it 3 times. I'm scheduled to see it a 4th. And I'm not planning to see Spider-Man Brand New Day again. I felt like I got it all the first time. And if I were to rewatch it, it's probably going to be home on streaming, and I'm probably going to start at 90 minutes in when we fight the Hulk. Like, that's about, because there's, it's like I said, it seems it's overstuffed, and I think it could definitely be more efficient.
I think it's got great music. I want to say really good needle drops in this movie, namely like a couple that I recognized. I was like, oh man, things that fit really, really well. There's this really great scene when, well, probably a second act, maybe end of the first act, Holland is kind of sitting in a cafe doing his own thing when he hears Ned, his friend, over his shoulder. He turns and looks, and sure enough, there he is, Jacob Batalon, right? Doesn't recognize Peter Parker because he doesn't know him. And he gets this devilish idea to maybe get up and follow him. But he's like, hey, you know what? He doesn't know who I am. Let me see where he's going. And he takes off to follow him. They kick in with the, like, this really smooth Tame Impala track that kind of just fits perfect. Credits are really great. Post-credits are bad. I must stop waiting around for these, dog. I couldn't believe how bad the post-credit was on this movie. It was like, well, I can't. Oh, dude, terrible. But outside of that, I think very visual, big action, little full. I don't think it makes for a bad comic book movie, but Andy and I watch a lot of movies, and it ends up just being kind of, you know, good. It's like a B plus or something, you know, like, I don't know. It's fine. Maybe even a B. Like, I think it ends up being a little fine for us, but for folks who go see movies just a few times a year, like, probably a baller. You're going to get the popcorn and you're going to get the drink and you're going to eat a bucket of popcorn in the dark and you're going to think this is a great time, because it kind of is, you know, and that's fine. Is it the best comic book movie of the year? Maybe. Cause Avengers kind of looks a little messy. I don't know. I heard they got a better trailer for Avengers at Comic-Con, but from what I can tell, Avengers looks like it's going to be a tough road to hoe.
I mean, it's up and down, because if you think last year, all of Marvel's projects last year were kind of failures. You had Captain America 4, Brave New World, underperformed Thunderbolts, good movie, underperformed Fantastic Four, mediocre movie, way underperformed. And also, they were really kind of hoping that was going to kick off. That was the beginning of Phase 6, for what it's worth. And they didn't really jumpstart things the way that I think they had hoped. And now this year, it's a totally different story. Everyone loves Brand New Day. Everyone's probably going to be a lot more excited for Doomsday. So it's up and down. But like I said, I think what I heard on the big pick podcast, they were talking about how maybe comic book movies needed to fail a little bit for a while to get back to the basics, get back to our roots of, like, we want to see Spider-Man and Batman and our big name heroes swinging web. We don't want to see our C and D list heroes with C and D list stars. So I think they've learned a lot.
Yeah, and I think that is what helps make this feel different than other just kind of general comic book fare. I know I cited Supergirl earlier, but Supergirl is definitely, I know it's got a couple cameos, but nothing exciting. This has, like, it feels like 7 big cameos that are, like, really solid and point at something. And that's something that Marvel has always kind of excelled at, is building building a sort of, like, web of content and ideas, no pun intended, that people can connect to across stuff and feel like you don't have to do the homework, you know, like it works good. Holland Spider-Man manages to kind of maintain this sort of innocence that he can stand apart from other comic book movies. You don't have to go see Thunderbolts to enjoy Spider-Man Brand New Day, even though if you did see Thunderbolts, you may get a little bit more out of it. I think that's good. I have not watched anything with, like, John Bernthal's The Punisher that I know of. I think he was in maybe one of those Netflix shows back in the day, like Daredevil or something.
I watched a couple of those, yeah.
Yeah, but I watched this just fine and think he's great. Definitely Disney's Punisher, but, you know, he's a Punisher. He's great. I'm going to see him on some kid's t-shirt in the grocery aisle next time I'm walking through the grocery store. It's going to be great. In the meantime, Spider-Man Brand New Day, you should get to recommendations. Any other thoughts?
I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend Spider-Man Brand New Day?
Overall, I would, especially for the fans. If you're a fan of comic book movies and Spider-Man, even if you haven't seen the other 37 Marvel movies, you're going to have a good time. There's lots of action. There's lots of stars, lots of comic book characters and people. It is a lot of fun. I think the second half is a lot stronger than the first half. It's a little overstuffed. It's a little bit too long, but overall recommend.
Yeah, I'd recommend it as well. People want their films to feel like events. If you're going to pay for the popcorn and you're going to pay for the drink and go to the trouble to get off your couch and go to the theater, you want it to feel like it all is worth it. Spider-Man is a 2.5-hour movie that feels like it's worth it. It's a big budget superhero movie. Worth it. You're going to love it. You're going to have a great time. Go check out Spider-Man. If you're looking for something profound or deeper, probably not going to find it in Spider-Man Brand New Day, but that's okay. Somebody will get meaning out of it. You know, somebody will feel like that big third act emotional payoff is, it hits him right here, I guess. But not me and not Andy, and that's okay. That's Spider-Man Brand New Day. Solid movie. I can't believe it made $1 billion in 3 days. We got to talk about some upcoming trailers, Andy. What do we call this segment?
It's time for the trailer park. So we're going to start off with Clayface, which we saw the full trailer, which I think was released at Comic-Con. Coincidentally, we got to see a lot more of this with Tom Rhys Harries, who plays an actor named Matt. He's an actor playing an actor named Matt Hagen, who's a rising star, gets in with some bad people, some gangsters or something. They cut up his face. He's horribly mutilated. And his love interest, played by Naomi Ackie, has, tells him, we have this experimental stuff, we can give it to you, it might help, we don't know. And it's this huge amount of body horror where they like inject something into his face, and it, you know, his disfigured face is fixed and he's the beautiful man that he has been, but he can't hold it. You know, it's Clayface. His body molds and shifts and he can't maintain this. And there's a scene on a plane that I'm not going to describe, but it made me made my skin crawl. And there's a lot of that in this trailer. This looks really good. This is like straight body horror. This comes out October 23rd. I'm super psyched for this.
I'm looking forward to Clayface. I'm worried it's going to bomb. I don't know if enough people are going to come out for what this is. Like, I think it does thread a clever needle with horror. Naomi Ackie in there is solid. New Kid looks fun, but like, I just was watching the trailer and thinking to myself, like, I saw it in the theater in front of something, and it's just like, are people going to come to this? Like, is this a real thing people want? Or does this look like some goofy SNL sketch or something? I think it's real. I hope it's real. I don't know what everybody else thinks, but I guess I shouldn't worry about that so much. Clayface looks good. I don't know. I hope it's good. I hope it's something cool. I would love it for it to thread some sort of thread some sort of needle that DC needs after Supergirl, because Supergirl was kind of a bit of a bomb. Speaking of DC, we got to talk about the trailer for Lanterns over on HBO. Yeah, Lanterns, that kind of True Detective-esque DC show covering, who is it, John Stewart, new Lantern, who's being trained by Hal Jordan, old right. Lantern in the heart of the American Midwest to investigate some sort of, I'm going to guess, crime, conspiracy, murder, something, when they discover that things may be bigger than simply their small planet dealings. Looks kind of good. I don't know a lot about it. I read a 4chan leak that said Kyle Chandler dies after the end of the first episode, and I'm like, hope that's not true. We'll see. Probably not. 4chan leaks aren't real. Anyway, what do you think of the trailer for Lanterns?
So this is the trailer that people were really want. When the first teasers came out, people didn't like it. The reaction was really kind of negative. This looks really cool. We got to see a lot of Green Lantern. They can create shields or other kind of contraptions, some cool stuff. We also got to see some good surprises, get a little bit better idea. We got to see Sinestro, which, if you don't know, is a fallen Green Lantern who becomes a Yellow Lantern. Yellow Lanterns are powered by fear. Batman would be an example of a Yellow Lantern. So that was a huge reveal. Sinestro is in this. We see him kind of mentoring Hal Jordan, warning him that he's like, you're not training, you're training. This man will replace you. We also get a confirmation of it's like an invasion of what are called Martian Manhunters. I realize as I say this is getting really comic book heavy. Martian Manhunter is a character famous from the Justice League. He's a shapeshifter from Mars. And it looks like they might be kind of like an invasion of these men happening. I think this looks really cool. This starts in just a week from Sunday, and I'm super excited about it. It's going to be the next thing that I watch. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to like weekly check-ins on what's going on in the show. Like, it reminds me a little like Peacemaker, like when that was hitting. Like, every week it'd be like, hey, you watch new Peacemaker? What'd you think? Oh my God, that was crazy. And like, that's the kind of juice DC needs right now. Like, films are solid for sure, but like, just a little bit of water cooler conversation, because right now Spider-Man's crushing it, and like, wouldn't be bad to have them in the conversation, especially in regards to premium television. That is August 16th, like you said, very soon. Two more to talk about. You're up next.
Wicker is a new film, which this almost, when I tell you about this, I thought that this was fake. I thought this was like an SNL sketch or like a 30 Rock film pitch. Wicker is about this British village where a woman played by Olivia Colman asked the local wizard warlock to make her a man out of straw. He does, with, you know, through magic played by Peter Dinklage, creates this man played by Alexander Skarsgård, for whom she has lots of very visible sex with in the trailer. The whole village is talking about it. He's a man made of wicker and straw. Everyone's kind of like, well, hear me out. It's Alexander Skarsgård, and he likes to play these freaky roles. This movie looks so bizarre. I might have to see it. I'll look at, well, what do you think? I'll look when this comes out.
Yeah, this looks so strange. If you're on Twitter or Threads, maybe you probably saw some screenshots kind of coming out from the trailer, and it took a couple days between when like screen caps started to land and when the trailer hit, and screen caps made it look like a horror movie. It was like, oh, this looks like, it's very shadowy, it's very dark. These kind of brief shots you could get of this kind of wicker man looked very strange, a little bit of body horror. I was like, oh, this is strange. Then the trailer comes out and you're like, oh no, this is like a raunchy sex comedy. Like, I didn't expect this at all. And like, I think that tonal shift is a big play in what's probably going to lead to this getting more eyes than it would otherwise. I just thought it was going to be something kind of generic, and it turns out it's something very strange. Yeah, Olivia Colman, Skarsgård is our wicker man, Elizabeth Debicki, Richard F. Grant, Peter Dinklage is in this movie. Really odd, really strange, very curious. Wicker, that's coming out October 30th in the UK, at least. So at least near then for the rest of us, right? Maybe September. One more to talk about. We're going to talk about the trailer for Victorian Psycho. So Victorian Psycho is weird. You may notice it sounds a little like its American counterpart, American Psycho. I think it's effectively just lifting that titling, because it's not much like American Psycho at all. It's based on a book, as far as I know, from Virginia Fiedo, follows Winifred Noddy, who is a deranged and very quiet housemaid or governess who takes a job watching the children and tending to the home of a very large family, the Pounds family at Enser House. That's their estate, right? Their stately mansion. It's a Victorian era, of course. Winifred is played by Micah Monroe, who we love, saw in Long Legs and It Follows. And she is kind of this quiet woman who is just kind of doing some murdering on the back end. It looks like nobody is safe in the Pounds family. The women, the children, the mom, the dad. I think everyone's going to die in Victorian Psycho. It's bloody, it's gory, it cuts to lots of like squelching and blood squibs and axes going into chests. Victorian Psycho. Odd. Like, one part's comedy, one part's like very strange horror. I'm interested for sure. I'm definitely interested. I don't know if it's going to be any good. What do you think?
Yeah, this looks like one of those, I don't know. It's a fun little horror movie. It's only going to be 90 minutes. It has an interesting cast also featuring Thomasin McKenzie, Jason Isaacs, Ruth Wilson, and one Jacob B. Jupe, who we remember from Hamnet. This looks, yeah, I'm not sure what to make of this. Is it, I can't tell the tone. I'm not real sure what it's going to be about. Allegedly, it's based on a true story of some real life psychotic Victorian woman who was a serial killer, something like that. I'll probably watch it.
Yeah. It seems like something would come out on like Shudder, right? Like just some kind of midnight horror sort of film. I imagine it's getting a theatrical release, but I don't think it's going to be very wide. We'll see. Yeah, and Victorian Psycho comes out in the fall from Bleecker Street. So keep it here on Oscar for more. Just curious. curious about Victorian Psycho. I hope it's a banger, though. Would love for this to be a gooey midnight horror. Anyway, we have one more film to talk about on this episode. Andy's going to be taking the summary on this. Andy, please, take it away.
Her Private Hell. So this is the fourth, maybe fifth film from a Swedish director, Nicholas Winding Refn, who, of course, is famous for 2011's Drive. That put him on the map along with Ryan Gosling. That is a classic. He followed it up with a couple of other strange films, Only God Forgives, which also starred Gosling, and then The Neon Demon from 2016-2017, which was like a fashion horror thing that starred Elle Fanning. Really interesting film. And then he took a long break. He hasn't made a proper film in about 7 years. Now we have Her Private Hell, which stars Sophie Thatcher as Elle. She is the daughter of a famous actor played by Doug Ray Scott called Johnny Thunders. She is also an actress herself, jaded by this Hollywood that takes place in kind of a fantastical future. She is good friends with Havana Roseliu's Dominique. And while they are good friends, it turns out that Dominique has actually married her father. And so now her friend is now her stepmother. Very strange dynamic. There's also a young ingenue played by Kristen Frosseth, a newcomer who's new to Hollywood and the Hollywood lifestyle and the glamour, and she's looking for acceptance and to be, you know, one a peer in this world that seems amazing to her. Meanwhile, there's a lot going on in this film. This fog is settling in to LA. It's trapping everyone there. They say it has, you know, bad things happen, mysterious things happen. Meanwhile, there is a serial killer on the loose called the Leatherman, who's being pursued by Private K, played by Charles Melton. This movie is really, really weird. It is really bizarre. And I think Nicholas Winding Refn is very much an acquired taste. People got up about halfway and left, I think mostly out of boredom. It is a very, very slow film, and it's very long. It's just short of a full 2 hours. It's total vibes. Like, it looks gorgeous. Everyone on screen is gorgeous, and it's a mix of the rest of his work. If you're familiar with all his films, this film makes a lot of sense. If you're not, it makes no sense at all. It has the style and fashion from The Neon Demon. We see that a little bit at the beginning. It has the colors and violence of Only God Forgives. It has the violence and sex through that's kind of pleasant through everything he's done. So it kind of makes sense in that kind of thematic well, but I don't really understand what is going on in this movie. Everyone speaks really weird. It's a little hard to follow, but it's totally about how it looks. Everyone's gorgeous. Everyone has these incredible outfits. Everyone's smoking. There's fog. There's mist. There's these bright neon colors. There's some interesting, there's some good performances all around. I just don't really know what it's about. And it was a real struggle. If I had to watch this at home, there's no way I'm getting through it in one sitting. So there, like I said, it's got a lot of style, a lot of vibes, but man, it was a struggle.
So let's deconstruct the metaphor a little bit for the folks at home. What is this movie about? Fundamentally, it's a girl who has trouble at home and is being pursued by some kind of antagonist force, and is maybe getting some help from a strange friend in Charles Melton, who's this kind of investigator. Like, is that like if you strip away all the visuals and like all the complicated metaphor, what is actually happening at the center? It's just like, it's a girl who's got a problem.
Those two storylines are kind of separate. He is pursuing the Leatherman. Like the girls on screen, they talk about the Leatherman, and he's the mist comes, he comes, and that's where he kills people. But they don't, like, I don't think Charles Melton actually interacts with this, like, the group of three girls. It's kind of separate. That's what I mean. It's hard to tell, like, what is actually going on. There is this dynamic of this relationship of her and her best friend. Her best friend recently married her dad. Obviously, that's really ruined their relationship. But they're all on this movie together, and so they have to work together and be around each other. They don't want to, so it's just this real uncomfortable dynamic. You get like a film in a film, just a scene where they're filming this like sci-fi thing that looks really cheap and bad, and it's supposed to look cheap and bad. But I think it's about these relationships that you have within fame, within these places that normal people don't live. Like I said, the newcomer Hunter is all about, like, you know, she's trying to impress everyone and trying to get on everyone's good side. And, you know, Elle and Dominique are just rolling their eyes because they've been famous, or they've been in this life for a while, so they don't, it's nothing to them. And they know the downsides of it all, or like the negative sides of fame. And so, like I said, it's kind of difficult to say what it's about and what's going on. I was reading through the Wikipedia and it just has a description of the plot, but there's no like a lot of explanation. Like I said, if you've seen Only God Forgives, where in that film, Ryan Gosling is in Thailand, in Bangkok, and he's kind of trying to investigate the murder of this young girl. That's what I see is similar, though. In all his movies, he has this, there's usually a lot of violence against women, and then that violence is repaid in some sort of avenging angel. We see this in Drive, in Only God Forgives, not so much in The Neon Demon, but then again in this film as well. So there's these themes that I see in all his work, but I don't, I would probably have to watch this again, which I'm never going to kind of understand it more. But it was definitely a vibe.
What do you think Ruffin's biggest kind of hurdle is? Because I think he's trying to do too much. Like, clearly it's not visuals. My man has got the visuals. Like, that is what works the best about all of these features, I think. Like, even Drive, to a point. Like, I don't think it's vibes. Like, I think it's in writing and editing. I think his writing is, if he wrote this movie, I think he did. But I'll look it up here in a second. And then, yeah, the edit is just like abysmally boring. Like, God Forgives had this problem. It's like, I know it's supposed to be a big metaphor, but it's like, he's picking this. He knows how to make a competent film. We all saw Drive. Like, he's choosing to make this kind of art. This is his art. It's by NWR. That's what he's putting on his movies now. Right? Like, would you say that's his biggest thing?
I'm trying to think. I feel like The Neon Demon is his most successful film. I think that movie is actually better than Drive, because it is about this young girl this young girl comes to LA. She wants to be like a model, and she immediately makes friends with these terrible girls who are very jealous of her. And it's about, that movie is about predators and about how everyone in that movie is a predator one way or another. There's a mountain, this whole mountain lion thing that happened, motif, and then that's a parallel for actual people in the film. I feel like his themes and the things he's trying to talk about are most clear and accessible in The Neon Demon. And this, I only semi-understood it because I've seen the rest of his movies. If I hadn't seen anything else, I would be like, what is this about? And why is there an hour left? It feels like it should be over by now.
Yeah. He did write it, by the way. I went and checked. Yes. Nicholas Winding Refn wrote the film and directed it. So here we are. Yeah, I think this is accessible to some. I don't think it's accessible on the scale he's doing it on. Like, that's the problem. And like, don't get me wrong, it's important to spread good art where you can, but like, somebody's going to be into this. Like, when I'm sure there's some film school kids that are going to be like, it's the most brilliant film of the year. Somebody's going to have this on the Letterboxd top four for sure. Like, somebody will really connect with this, but it's just like, you're leaving so many of us out in the cold. Like, you're making something that's just a little too out there. Like, it's a little too strange and it's hard to get there. You know, like, we see films like this from directors all the time, right? Like, films that are really strange. But he just seems like, ever since Drive, this is just the direction he's running in. These are the movies I'm making. This is my brand. This is my thing. I were talking about it before the show. It reminds me a little like Robert Eggers or even like Wes Anderson to a point. Like, you're just making your own thing and like, you're not worried about what other people think. Do you think he comes back to a Drive maybe at some point, or do you think he's just like off the edge of the map? These are his films.
I don't think he comes back to a Drive, but I think this is his most indulgent and extreme film. It's him swinging the pendulum all the way to one side. I'd be excited to see, like, bring this back from a 10 to like an 8 and let me see that film. Like, his follow-up, his probably next film or two, I think he'll probably swing back a little bit, and that might be something that's really exciting. That's what I feel The Neon Demon is. The Neon Demon is, it's like an 8 in extremity. And this is going a little bit farther, but that's a lot of times that's how you grow as an artist. Like, you just push all the limits and then you find out, okay, this is a little bit too far. That doesn't work. Let's bring it back a little bit down to reality.
The most indulgent Nicholas Winding reference ever been. Not bad. Might be something there for a title or a thumbnail. Any other thoughts or recommendations?
Good performances all around. Like, the actors are giving their own. And I know Sophie Thatcher does not want to be like a normal kind of Hollywood ingenue. I was reading an article about her this week where she's kind of like a little bit like Jenna Ortega, where she's wanting to do strange, weird projects. She's not. Yeah, she's like the opposite of Sydney Sweeney. Not, and I don't mean that negatively. She's just wanting to do different kind of really off the wall, projects. And she's not all about using her femininity in her films as much as other actors are. Everyone's batting. Everyone's at a 10 on this. Charles Melton, Havana Rose Liu, who's another rising star. She's going to really blow up in the next few years, I think. Everyone's given it their all. It just is. It's a weird movie, man.
Yeah. Well, I like weird movies. I'm bummed I didn't see it. I wanted to, but between moving and just kind of a limited release window, it just seemed hard to nail down. There was a minute where I thought I could go see it, and then that fell through. But I got to know, hey, would you recommend Her Private Hell?
I'm going to say pass on this. Even the most dedicated cinephile, I think, would struggle. Unless if you're a fan of experimental, weird, out there films and you like the actors involved, give it a chance when it's on streaming. But just know it's very long. It's very slow. It's hard to understand what's going on. But it's definitely something unique. It's definitely, I haven't seen anything like this before. And it's this director that we know and kind of love, really going all out. So I would say pass for most people, unless only the most diehard cinephiles.
And that's Off Script, episode 345. What a week, or a last couple of weeks. Gotta be honest, next week is kind of a weird hit or miss thing. So I think we're dividing and conquering. Andy, what are we watching?
So we're into August. Summer's over, and you never know what the August releases are going to be. One Night Only is coming out. This is the rom-com where single people are only allowed to have sex on one day of the year. Strange premise. People are calling it the Sex Purge movie. One of us is going to see that. I'm going to see that. And then also Super Troopers 3 is out this week, which Zach is going to go see. So we'll be doing those two theatrical films. And then also checking out Tuner, which is a film that we missed, starring Leo Woodall, who plays a half-deaf piano tuner who gets involved with a criminal organization because he can pick the vaults, safes, because of his extraordinary hearing ability. That sounds like a cheesy premise. I've heard this movie's phenomenal. So we're going to take a look at that on streaming. So One Night Only, Super Troopers 3, and Tuner.
That's right. It's a triple feature next week on Off Script. I would love to say that I'm getting away with murder not watching the Sex Purge movie, but Super Troopers 3 doesn't look much better, honestly, and the second one kind of sucked. God, we covered that on the show, and I was like, this is one of the worst films of the year, so I'm not super idyllic. But hey, we're going to have it for you next week, along with Tuner. If you enjoyed the show, best way to support us here on Off Script is just subscribe to the show or follow us on one of our social media pages. If you've seen us before, if you've heard me say this before and you didn't subscribe last time, this is your message from the universe. It's meant to be. Here we are. Again, we're doing this dance again, you and I and Andy also. If you enjoyed the show, you can also follow us on those social media services. That's what I just told you to do. Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, anywhere your podcast can be found. iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia for our audio episodes. A YouTube page. God, we got big things going on YouTube. Come on over, throw a like on a video, click on another video, throw a like on that one too. Help your boys. And you can follow social media. You can check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com, and you can email us correspondence directly from you to us at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. From all of us at Off Script, the home of Bold Cinema, I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.